Hey, y'all, how's it going? Welcome to the show. It's my show, the Scott Horton Show. Hey, thanks for tuning in. This here's my show. It's libertarian foreign policy, mostly. But, you know, also police state stuff and occasionally central banking, which is really at the root of everything evil. But anyway, Ray McGovern is going to be back on the show. I know what you're saying. Scott, you just interviewed Ray the other day. Yeah, you're right. But, yeah, we just barely got to talk about Ukraine at the end. And I want to hear more about what Ray has to say about that. And, in fact, he has a brand new article all about that just came out at Consortium News, and we're running it at antiwar.com today. And so, yeah, you know, I want to ask him about that. And then, of course, I don't know, you may or may not have seen the news that Putin has been seen in public again in a meeting in, I think, in Kazakhstan. And he probably just had the flu is all right. But apparently he doesn't have the flu anymore, so. Big deal. They were trying to make it sound like there was a coup d'etat or that he was dead or whatever. Yeah, I don't know. For the head of a major country like that to be gone for a week, that's kind of a big deal. Rumors abounded. I never really worried on his behalf about a coup. He seems like the kind of guy who would protect himself pretty well from something like that. He seems like he'd be a real hard target to overthrow. But you never know. I don't know. Especially, I guess, in Russian politics. But anyway, there he is. He seems fine. I don't know if, from the clips they're showing on TV, I don't know whether he, used a handkerchief during the meeting or not. I'm sure some Kremlinologist was looking very closely at that. But anyway, he ain't dead. He ain't missing. For whatever that's worth to you. And there's also a new story where they just kind of put this out. Maybe he said it himself. I'm not sure. I don't know if they were asked or what, but said that he considered going on nuclear alert over the Ukraine crisis, and especially during the re-annexation of Crimea a year ago. I don't like talk like that, man. Because when he says nuclear alert, he means thermonuclear alert. And he means thousands of them. Thousands of thermonuclears. And those things burn really hot. That's the thing about them. They burn really, really hot. Yeah. Anyway. So, Ray McGovern, he used to be a Soviet specialist back at the CIA, back in the day when there was a Soviet Union. He seems to know what he's talking about. Writes at Consortium News. All right, and then also, I'm kind of glad I only have... Mandy Smithberger is going to be on. She's from POGO, the Project for Government Oversight something. I forgot exactly what it stands for. Anyway, it doesn't matter because the point being that she's got this great study about the F-35. And it's funny reading this. I don't know if she did this on purpose, but the deadpan humor in here is great. I'm sort of like reading it in Norm MacDonald's voice or something. Oh, yeah, and so that's also why you can't fly it in the rain. Don't just... Oh, man. Wing drop concerns. Well, that sounds fun. Anyway, as the guy who designed the F-16 and F-15 said, the F-35 works great. It works perfectly. You might have a false assumption, a bad assumption, about what its actual purpose is. If you think its purpose is to be a great fighter plane, then no, of course, by that standard, it's a piece of crap. But that's not the standard. The real purpose of the F-35 is to transfer money from the American government's treasury to the pockets of the people at Lockheed and their stockholders. That is the purpose of the plane. That's why it sucks so bad, and that's a big part of it. It's supposed to. And, you know, I even read a comment somewhere by someone who seemed to really know what he was talking about, a Pentagon really wonky type, saying, hey, man, don't believe all the hype about just how bad the F-35 is. It's really not that bad. But all the smear campaign against it? That is all a Lockheed plot. Because they want to see the F-35 scrapped so they can start all over again. Because that's where the real money's at. Starting all over again. So even the criticism, be careful. You know, the military has actually insisted that they get quite a few things right on the thing. It's usable. You could do it. But they're trying to lie to you. The Lockheed themselves, they want to scrap it. Anyway, I doubt that's true. I don't know, but funny. That's the economics of building piece of crap, do-nothing fighter jets for the American Pentagon. In our days of late empire here, cross your fingers. All right. So those are the interviews today. Also got a ton of news to talk about. A lot of the same old stuff, but boy, is it newsy. But right now, let me tell you about the chat room. You can join up the chat room during the show if you like that. It's at scotthorton.org/chat. Hey, guys. How are you doing? Thanks for showing up again. Good to see you. Happy to have you. scotthorton.org/chat. It's an IRC free node chat room. Hashtag Scott Horton Show if you're into that. Also, I'm on Twitter at Scott Horton Show if you like being yelled at. And, yeah. scotthorton.org. That's where I keep all my stuff, including the interview archives. We're in 3,500 of them now, going back to 2003. And also, if you're at Scott Horton Show, scotthorton.org, you'll notice in the right-hand margin my sponsors. And, I need sponsors. That's why I have a show, because I have sponsors. And what I also need is for you to patronize my sponsors. I was talking to a very good friend of mine who's been listening to my show since 2004 and probably every single interview since then. Huge fan of the show, huge friend of mine. And he said, I'm really starting to think about that coffee. Think about the coffee. Buy the coffee, for Christ's sake, man. The coffee is helping support the show. He's asked me, how's the show doing? You making money? You doing all right? I was considering buying some coffee. Buy the damn coffee. You drink coffee? And you like the show. Buy coffee from darrenscoffee.com. You see how we're killing two birds with one stone here and all that kind of thing? Mutually assured destruction. Self-interest beneficial exchange. Darrenscoffee.com. He helps support the show. Somebody else asked me, hey, do you know anybody who can do some artwork for some printing I need done? Yes, thebumpersticker.com. You've heard me say that 10 million times. Thebumpersticker.com. They know what the hell they're doing, I promise. Stop by there. And then, of course, there's Mike Swanson, the author of The War State, which is an awesome history of the rise of the national security state after World War II and the first three administrations there, Truman, Ike, and Kennedy. And then, he's also an investment advisor at wallstreetwindow.com, where basically he just shows you what he's doing in all his trades all the time and showing you how much money he's making or losing and telling you why he thinks it's the right thing to do. And then, so the deal is you can just play along on paper for a little while, see if he knows what he's talking about and see if you want to start actually following his advice in real life. That's wallstreetwindow.com. And then, of course, there's the Council for the National Interest, Phil Giraldi's group in Washington, D.C., basically trying to push back against the Israel lobby and their pernicious influence over our foreign policy. And you got to admit that America's an empire, and that's why Israel is so interested in controlling our foreign policy. So it's our government's fault in the first place and the people who support it. But, boy, do they suck. And you know what? Sorry, out of time, but more about my sponsors in just a second after this word from our sponsors. Hey, I'm Scott Horton here for The Future of Freedom, the monthly journal of the Future Freedom Foundation at fff.org/subscribe. Since 1989, FFF has been pushing an uncompromising moral and economic case for peace, individual liberty, and free markets. Sign up now for The Future Freedom, featuring founder and president Jacob Hornberger, as well as Sheldon Richmond, James Bovard, Anthony Gregory, Wendy McElroy, and many more. It's just $25 a year for the print edition, $15 per year to read it online. That's fff.org/subscribe, and tell them Scott sent you. Hey, I'm Scott Horton here, and I'm so excited about Commodity Discs from CommodityDiscs.com. They're 1 ounce silver pieces with a QR code engraved on the back side. Scan the code with your phone and get the instant spot price. Commodity discs are paving the way forward for the alternative currency community in America and around the world. The QR code Commodity Disc. Technology has now finally made a real free market silver currency viable. And anyone who donates $100 or more to the Scott Horton Show at scotthorton.org/donate gets one free. That's CommodityDiscs.com. All right, you guys, welcome back to the show. All right, I'm Scott. So, yeah, I'm just trying to finish up reading this this story about the F-35 here. Unbelievable. It really is something, man. Anyway. Hey, so let me get back to my sponsors here real quick, because it's important that you know who to support, because they support this show if you're interested in that. And that's Mike Swanson, The War State, and WallStreetWindow.com. Phil Giraldi's group, The Council for the National Interest. Of course, the Future of Freedom Foundation, and along with that, Robertson Roberts Brokerage, Inc., Darren's Coffee, Liberty Stickers, and thebumperstickers.com. Liberty Stickers, the ones that are really good, but the art is not really good, but the slogan is, those are the ones I made up. The ones where the art is really good, but meh, those are somebody else's. Yeah, libertystickers.com. Back before I had a radio show, I would always just fantasize about putting all my hate onto vinyl bumper stickers. As much as having a radio show. So I do both now. Bumper stickers and complaining out loud too. If only I had the patience and the time to write. Alright. And then, yeah, man, also, did I say Robertson Roberts Brokerage, Inc. You want to buy some silver or gold or platinum or palladium? Those guys will help you buy precious metals. And they're honest guys, and they take, you know, a very reasonable cut that you will approve of, and you'll like them. They do good business there. That's Robertson Roberts Brokerage, Inc. And then, who the hell am I leaving out here, man? Well, of course, there's Voices of Liberty and Liberty.me are... Are playing the show, and so definitely join up liberty.me. I don't think you have to join up at Voices of Liberty, but they're playing my interviews at both places there, so that's a really good thing. And go-kart galaxy, if you like mini bikes or go-karts, stop by go-kart galaxy, stop by scotthorton.org and click the link there. And I know I'm missing somebody. Oh, I could mention the Liberty Radio Network that allows me to be on their network every day. That's nice. Oh, crap. And the newest one, of course, Taxpayers United of America, fighting government pensions at taxpayersunited.org/govpensions. And they're holding these seminars. The next one's in Vegas. It's only $15 now to learn how to FOIA the pensions of your local so-called civil servants. Ha! So that you can expose them for being the corrupt parasites that they are. The Future Freedom Foundation. I mentioned Darren's Coffee. And then, of course, there's Tom Woods' Liberty Classroom. Man, I want to sign up for Liberty Classroom. Again, with the time I need in the day. And CommodityDiscs.com. And the cool thing about Commodity Discs is lots of different things. But one of them is, if you donate $100 or more to the show at any given time, I will send you a Commodity Disc in the mail. And what it is it's an ounce of silver. It's a round. It's not a coin. It's a round. An ounce of 0.9999999 pure silver, whatever many nines. And it has a QR code on the back instead of a face value engraved on it. When, after all, silver is, its price is denominated in U.S. dollars around here anyway. So instead of having a face value scratched onto the front, it's got a QR code. So you scan it with your phone, and it tells you how much it's worth right now in the market. Isn't that brilliant? Isn't that the greatest idea for a currency in the history of forever, man? I think it's so cool. The QR code commodity disc. That's at commoditydiscs.com. Yeah, think of a better name for that thing. Send your suggestions for better names for the commodity disc, and you can't call it a coin. That's the rule. Maybe there's something else you can't call it too. I forget. Otherwise, I'm happy to hear your suggestions by tweets or emails or chat room comments. Whole Food Multi-Complete Vitamins. Those guys are supporting the show as well. I forgot to mention them. And, yeah, actually, they should be a little bit higher on the list here, shouldn't they? They should be up one. My Heroes Think. Also, Harry Brown, Murray Rothbard, Ron Paul statues. Little statues for your desk, man. I want a Murray Rothbard one. I got the Ron Paul. No, I don't. I have the Harry Brown. In fact, I want a Rothbard and a Ron Paul now that I think about it. They're cool, man. Use them for bookends. And those are my heroes, too. So, myheroesthink.com for that. All right, so, you know, I don't know, man. It seems like the right thing to do for me to stop every once in a while and give a little bit of extra appreciation for the sponsors of this show for sponsoring this show. And no one of them pays me more than peanuts, really, so I ain't bought off. None of them want me to say anything but what I'm already saying anyway. I rest assured you of that. All right. So I think that's all the business I need to take care of on the show today. Now down to business. Now that this segment is already almost over, why did that really take me 2 segments to do? Jesus, Horton. I need to get better at this. Nah, I don't know. I'm glad I took the time. Yeah, I am. Okay, so what can I say very quickly in the end of this segment and save all the real news to the other side of the break? I know. I think I'll just go down to my police state section here with you real quick. San Francisco cops are busted calling blacks animals, justifying the murder of one by saying he is an animal, and a lot more worse stuff than that, too. Man, really, one of them, I think, where'd it go? He's accused here anyway, one of these saying that all blacks should be killed. San Francisco cop. And one that got in trouble for going way over the line, I guess. San Francisco cops said it was legal to murder black man because he was, quote, an animal. That's at Think Progress. And yes, I know that's the Center for American Progress, but their blog has some newsy stuff on it sometimes. What are you going to do? And then there's cop shoots 8th grade child with taser gun for, quote, being disruptive. And I don't know why you people put your kids in government school. You must be out of your minds. For another one here, filming cops. Raw video shows cop choking child continuously until he goes limp, collapses, and gets brain damage. Would have gotten away with it, too, if it wasn't for you pesky video cameras, which are, you know, really there to oppress the children. But in this case, ended up backfiring against this goon. Fighting a kid at school. You put your kid in a government school, and then you go, man, you know, we have all these school maskers and stuff. We should have cops in the schools in case, you know, there's some guy shows up to try to kill all the kids, right? But instead, what do the cops do? They find things to do. There's not maskers going on all the time at every school, you know. So what do you think they're going to do? Nothing unless there's an attempted massacre? No, they're going to get involved in every dispute that could have been settled by the gym coach. Don't pretend you didn't know that. How could you put your kid in a government school run by the government for your precious child's education? The government? Really? Why would you do that? Oh, and also read, again, the heroic Jordan Smith at the Chronicle on another bogus murder prosecution that she destroys here at firstlook.org/The Intercept. Hey, all Scott here. If you're like me, you need coffee. Lots of it. And you probably prefer it tastes good, too. Well, let me tell you about Darren's Coffee Company at darrenscoffee.com. Darren Marion is a natural entrepreneur who decided to leave his corporate job and strike out on his own, making great coffee. And Darren's Coffee is now delivering right to your door. Darren gets his beans direct from farmers around the world. All specialty, premium grade, with no filler. Hey, the man just wants everyone to have a chance to taste this great coffee. Darren'sCoffee.com. Use promo code Scott and you get free shipping. Darren'sCoffee.com. Hey, y'all, Scott Horton here for WallStreetWindow.com. Mike Swanson knows his stuff. He made a killing running his own hedge fund and always gets out of the stock market before the government-generated bubbles pop. Which is, by the way, what he's doing right now, selling all his stocks and betting on gold and commodities. Sign up at WallStreetWindow.com and get real-time updates from Mike on all his market moves. It's hard to know how to protect your savings and earn a good return in an economy like this. Mike Swanson can help. Follow along on paper and see for yourself. WallStreetWindow.com. All right, guys, welcome back. I'm Scott Horton. It's my show, The Scott Horton Show. Appreciate y'all listening today. So, I know this is a jinx, and I should never say this. I'm going to try to keep the commentary at a minimum here and just blast through a bunch of news here because I only got two segments before the interviews begin. But first of all, then, to the ISIS news now. Where am I at? Yeah, Syria. I got Syria, then Iraq. Okay, so, and I got to break these in half. It's the Islamic State, but then there's the Iraq side of the war and the Syria side of the war, sort of, kind of. Not that the line, the Sykes-Picot line is still there, but the eastern and western borders of the Islamic State exist, so I guess we got to take it in chunks. And there's some contradictory policies going on in geographical ways and otherwise, but so that's the thing. So we got to split it into Syria and Iraq for a minute. But then on the Syria stories, we got to split those up too, because what we have here is, the U.S. throwing in the towel. From the Agence France-Presse, U.S. does not want to see the Syrian regime collapse, says the CIA, said John Brennan at the Council on Foreign Relations last week, right? While at the same time, non-lethal aid, U.S. spending $15 million to buy up journalists for anti-Assad reports. All right. John Kerry has said that, listen, we're willing to talk with Bashar al-Assad. Really? After all this time, now America's finally willing to talk to Assad instead of insisting that the rebels should keep fighting, no matter if the bin Ladenites are getting more and more powerful this whole time. Well, at the same time, we have an entire new propaganda campaign. Again, I'll refer you over to the Moon of Alabama blog, where they write some really good stuff all the time. And they link to Reuters. Syria's Nusra Front may leave al-Qaeda to form new entity. You know, the only problem with al-Nusra all along, really, is that rhetorically speaking, they still like Ayman al-Zawahiri. But you know, if we could just rebrand them a little bit, then we could call al-Qaeda in Syria the moderates. Right? Where America fought the Sunni-based insurgency in Iraq War II on behalf of the Shiite parties, but never mind that for a minute. Where they fought the Sunni-based insurgency, and including their most radical wing, al-Qaeda in Iraq, back then, they've been backing the Sunni-based insurgency in Syria, which has been dominated the entire time. It's not a small fraction, like in the Iraq Wars, say, 2004 through 7 or 8. Kind of thing. The al-Qaeda in Syria has always dominated the so-called rebellion in Syria. First the al-Nusra Front, and then the Islamic State broke off from it, but still these are just, you know, two branches of bin Ladenites at that point. And the so-called moderates were always a marginal force compared to the al-Nusra Front. And now that the moderates have been completely vanquished, and the ones who are still alive have gone over to al-Nusra, the Qataris, I guess, probably at the behest of the Americans, are trying to tell these guys, hey, we could give you even more money and guns, Western guns, American guns, if you just renounce the bin Laden organization. Just renounce Zawahiri and say you have only local goals. And, I mean, they're doing it. They're pushing it. And, I don't know. I mean, clearly it looks like it's our allies at this point pushing this more than the Americans. But I don't think I'd take it seriously when John Kerry, Secretary of State, John Kerry is saying, oh, yeah, you know, I guess maybe it is time to go ahead and work with Assad here to some degree. Right when more and more reports are coming out, and including it all in the Israeli press, about the Israelis treating the Al-Qaeda fighters. There's this huge article in the Wall Street Journal. Al-Qaeda, a lesser evil? Syria war pulls U.S. and Israel apart. And you got to read between the lines here a little bit, because they don't lay it out quite starkly for you, but they're pretty much making the case that, yeah, hey, where Hezbollah and the Ba'athist regime in Syria are considered the enemy by the Israelis, Al-Qaeda are the ones who attacked the United States. But the Israelis don't care about that. The Israelis are perfectly happy to work with al-Nusra because they hate Hezbollah more. And they try to spin it like, oh no, you know, we're just giving them medical attention. What would you have us do? Not? Okay, well, show me them treating wounded Hezbollah fighters then. Yeah, exactly. They're choosing sides, and they're siding with the al-Nusra front. And the thing about this, too, is, and I'll never understand this, or maybe I'm just really overlooking something and someone will explain it to me. Well, I guess Margulies has given it a shot at making me understand before, but to me it seems crazy. It seems absolutely insane that the Israeli government for even a moment would consider preferring a bunch of jihadist, bin Ladenite, suicide bomber, head chopper types to the secular fascist tyranny of the Ba'athists in Damascus, which ever since the father died, I don't know the whole history of Hafez al-Assad and Israel and their entire relationship, but certainly since the son Bashar has come into power, he's had virtually no problem with the Israelis at all. He's had no real dispute over the Golan Heights that the Israelis seized from Syria. That's, you know, typically considered Syrian land. He doesn't do anything to them. When Al-Qaeda most likely killed the Prime Minister Rafik Hariri, a former Prime Minister Rafik Hariri in Lebanon, Lebanese Prime Minister, I mean to say, in 2005, and they've basically just pinned it on Hezbollah and Syria because they felt like it. He went ahead and got his troops out of Lebanon as per the demand of the United States and the Israelis and pulled his troops out under what, you know, seemed like pretty much a hoax. It was an Al-Qaeda attack. Just read Gareth Porter on it for starters. But, you know, Raimondo at antiwar.com was good on that one all along, too. All the accusations of how it was that Hezbollah did it were proven false. That's not what happened. It was an Al-Qaeda guy that did it. And I don't know who put him up to it exactly, but it wasn't Hezbollah, that's for sure. All right, but anyway, so right as John Kerry is saying for the first time in years that it's time to sit down for dinner with Bashar al-Assad and work this thing out, they are ramping up the propaganda campaign to normalize, to moderatize, is that what you call it? Al-Qaeda in Syria. Javed al-Nusra, as the director of national intelligence put it, he said that, I think even to Congress it was, that he said that at this point anyone who's not ISIS is a moderate. Well, I guess that would count for Assad too, but he was talking about al-Qaeda. We got to somehow rehabilitate these guys. And I don't know whether one of these stories is just a cover for the other, is a lie for the other. We're going to really clamp down and support al-Qaeda against Assad, or we're going to really clamp down and support Assad against al-Qaeda, or it's a brilliant scheme to really support both against each other, or there are different factions of the government fighting over who ought to be backed more than the others or what. I mean, when it comes to Turkey and Israel and Saudi and Qatar, they've made their position very clear. The Americans are all over the place, which is, you know, it's a mess, whichever is the correct explanation for why it's such a mess. You know, clearly, I know that the presidency is really just a ceremonial type position, but if the president really cracks the whip and says, no, we're not doing this, we are doing that, then he can pretty much get his way, right? Like, we do not want to back al-Qaeda in Syria anymore. He could get his way if he insisted on that, right? If he wanted to fight about it, I guess, meh. Keep backing everybody against everybody. Oh, man. All right. Sodder and the battle for Tikrit next. In America today, teachers, cops, judges, and other so-called public servants make far more than the average taxpayer. And their pensions? Well, if the people knew, they'd join us. That's where you come in. Taxpayers United of America is embarking on a great new project to train activists how to take on the parasites in your communities. The entire process, from prying loose the facts to disseminating the truth to the people. The next of these great workshops is Saturday, April 11th in Las Vegas. It's just $15. For more information, go to taxpayersunited.org/govpensions. All right, y'all, welcome back. All right, so there's a giant battle going on for Tikrit right now. And Mitch Prothgro was explaining on the show, I guess week before last, about how Mosul and Fallujah are both much bigger cities. I forget what he said. Did he say about Ramadi? I think Ramadi is bigger, too. Tikrit is not that big of a town. But anyway, it's an important battle for the sake of PR and all that. It would be the greatest victory of, you know, Shiite-controlled Baghdad, their military, their Iranian-backed militias, etc. So they haven't won yet. There are plenty of, as Coburn said, right as the battle was starting, boy, they're going to be invading a city full of booby traps and bombs and snipers and madness, and it's not going to be easy. It's going to be hard. They're making the move right now. One of these headlines, is it an anti-war story? Yeah, at antiwar.com, Jason is saying that the offensive has stalled for now. I guess my impression was that the Islamic State guys pretty much, you know, left some kind of force to fight for the city, but decided not to devote everything they had to holding it. I guess they figured they'd lose anyway, but more men. But it remains to be seen. The biggest question, first of all, it remains to be seen, you know, how successful they'll be. It's not over yet. But assuming that they are able to basically win against the Islamic State fighters in Tikrit, there's a big question about who's going to populate the town after that and whether they're going to try to, implement a sectarian cleansing, because all the civilians have fled anyway. So it's basically a ghost town. There's nobody there except the fighters. Well, not nobody, but you understand. Most of the population has fled. And so that's going to be the real big thing to watch, is to see whether the people are allowed back again. And then what kind of precedent that sets. If you have the Sunni, very predominantly Sunni population of Tikrit come back, And agree to work under the, you know, with the government of Baghdad and under the authority of the government of Baghdad, under some ruling of the local, clerics and tribal leaders and whatever, then that's the best case scenario for the American and I guess probably Iranian strategy at this point. But remains to be seen whether that's going to happen or not. But it's also interesting that I was tweeting back and forth with Mitch Prothero a little bit about this yesterday, and he was saying that Muqtada al-Sadr has been sitting out this war because he doesn't want to get involved in this sectarian stuff. But then again, he's also hearing rumors that, you know, he's going to go ahead and get started now. And we've seen this before with Sadr. You know, he always was the Iraqi nationalist and anti-sectarian who was against the American and Iranian invasion of the country, basically, and wanted America and Iran out. So America tried to marginalize him and accuse him of being the one who was the most pro-Iranian, when that wasn't true. The ones America was backing, Dawa and Skiri, they were the ones who were the Supreme Islamic Council. They were the ones who were the most sectarian and Iranian-backed, not him. But anyway, he ended up eventually, especially in 2006 and 7, I guess, really fighting just like the Badr Brigade and with the Badr Brigade in the civil war against the Sunnis and the sectarian cleansing, kicking them out of Baghdad. So, and his militia, to whatever degree they do exactly what he wants, I don't know, but the Mahdi army certainly then is a force to be reckoned with. And Prothero said he certainly still has as much street credibility as, you know, kind of, better than he's maintained it better than any other political force in Iraq this whole time, basically, among his people. So always very important to watch what Muqtada al-Sadr is doing. And anyway, so far sitting this out. At least, you know, moving the push into Tikrit. I don't mean the entire war against the Islamic State. But anyway. Okay, and now more news. Israel. NBC has published a video, and this reminds me of that time in 2012 when they published how Israel's using the Mujahideen cult, communist terrorist cult, to assassinate scientists in Iran, everybody. Wow, why is this on the NBC nightly news? Everyone who already knew this asked, huh, what's going on there? Must be politics. The default is that NBC would censor a story like that, would never publish a story like that. Well, here's NBC showing the Israeli so-called defense forces, that is the foreign occupying army martial law system in the West Bank, invading these people's house in the middle of the night and interrogating their children, 9 and 11-year-old children, at American bought and paid for M4 machine gun point. Are you throwing stones? And, yeah, I'm sorry for laughing. It's absurd. It's so completely and ridiculously absurd. But, you know, no, I don't mean to diminish the tragedy of the whole damn thing. The kids are terrified. And the IDF, boy, they don't look like defense forces. They don't look like a bunch of heroes. They look like the Gestapo. They look like the Gestapo. What am I going to say? Go and look at the footage yourself. And this is a little Barack Obama press release for the Israeli election. Although, I don't know who he thinks he's helping. But this is the kind of story that wouldn't make NBC unless for a political reason other than, hey, that's newsworthy. They decided to publish it. So I don't know what's behind it, but it's worth looking at anyway. So you can see what your tax dollars are going to. The oppression of helpless children in the occupied West Bank. All right. And then also, yeah, I have it here, man. Netanyahu, first of all, I just love this headline. Behind bulletproof glass, Netanyahu addresses right-wing rally. Yeah, boy, he just can't be right-wing enough for the Israeli settlers. Even when here he is saying, quote, if I am elected, there will be no Palestinian state. And that comes from Hemi Shalev, who is the editor, U.S. editor of Haaretz, the liberal Tel Aviv daily. His translation, and he links to the video from his Twitter feed. It's spelled Chemi, C-H-E-M-I, Shalev, S-H-A-L-E-V. U.S. editor for Haaretz, doing the translating. And then his excuse, Middle East Eye, has a further bit of the quote. He cites potential radical Islamist attacks. Wait, rewind to last segment. And who's backing? And whose will is it that America and America's allies continue to back the al-Nusra Front, al-Qaeda in Syria, but Netanyahu's government? It's completely ridiculous. And in case you missed it, this is from last week, but shouldn't be missed. It's incredibly crazy. And, well, I don't know. I'm sorry. It's not incredibly crazy. You decide what all adjectives you want to put to it, man. I'll just let you know the fact that Israel's foreign minister, their secretary? I was reading the headline, had an O in it, and an O and a Y in it. Tricked me. Their secretary of state, basically. Their foreign minister, their ambassador at large to Earth, has called for disloyal Arabs to be beheaded with an axe. And no, this isn't, oh, overheard joking at a dinner party or something as a matter of hyperbole. No, he was saying, yes, we should get axes and cut their heads off. Former bar bouncer, fascist, foreign minister of Israel right now. That's the Israeli government right now. This is their secretary of state. Is basically an ISIS kook. The Jewish state in the Levant, as Max Blumenthal and them call it. I don't know. What a kook? Something? Yeah. Okay. Oh, and for disloyalty. Boy, that's pretty vague. You gotta admit. All right, now, oh, and the elections, I think, are tomorrow, and there's a chance that Netanyahu's gonna lose, y'all. There's the Labor Party, this guy Herzog, they might get more seats and have the ability to form a government. Although Netanyahu could still be the one to put the coalition together to form a government. It's not a simple, you know, winner-take-all plurality or 50 or majority vote type of thing. It's more complicated than that. Also, you should know Joshua Moravchik published a thing in the Washington Post saying we should start a war with Iran. And it's ridiculous. Go and read it. That's the war party's best case, which could be refuted by anyone. And then also, I thought it was funny that this warmonger Tom Cotton was accusing the Iranians of controlling Tehran. Oh, also, it's the anniversary of the murder of Rachel Corrie by the IDF monsters, too. Butchers. Not really monsters. I don't know, monsters. Hey, y'all, Scott Horton here for Liberty.me, the social network and community-based publishing platform for the liberty-minded. Liberty.me combines the best of social media technology all in one place and features classes, discussions, guides, events, publishing, podcasts, and so much more. And Jeffrey Tucker and I are starting a new monthly show at Liberty.me, Eye on the Empire. It's just $4 a month if you use promo code SCOTT when you sign up. And hey, once you do, add me as a friend on there at scotthorton.liberty.me. Be free. Liberty.me. All right, you guys, welcome back to the show. I'm Scott Horton. It's my show. On with the interviews today. First up is Mandy Smithberger. She is the director of the CDI Strauss Military Reform Project at POGO, the Project on Government Oversight. That's pogo.org. Welcome to the show. Mandy, how are you doing?
Pretty good. Thank you so much for having me.
Well, I really appreciate you joining us on the show today. And I don't know if it's your hilarious deadpan writing style or if it's just the facts that had me laughing my head off while I was reading this thing. Not ready for prime time. The F-35 is not ready for IOC and won't be anytime soon. Oh, there's my first question. What's IOC?
So that's initial operational capability. So the idea would be ready for combat.
Right. And then, well, does initial imply it should still keep getting better after that? And this is just good enough?
This is just starting to be ready for combat. And that, yes, more improvements are on the way. Not quite ready for full operational.
Right. IOC is the minimum threshold for good
right.
enough. Right. Okay, good. And it's not ready for that. Great. Now, so... It's funny because, you know, I've read about a lot of different problems with this thing that aren't even mentioned in here. But, you know, the machine gun and the camera for sighting ground targets and all these different things. The bombs don't fit in the bomb bays and they can only hold a couple anyway. And all kinds of different problems that aren't even in here. And yet it may take the whole interview to go through all of the different problems that you do cover in here and all of them being of the highest importance. So I guess could you start with the flawed software? That's where you start in at least the introduction to the study here is the flawed software where the plane systems don't even talk to each other, right? After how many years have they been designing this thing?
They've been designing it for many years now, and right, you still don't have the capability for these computer systems to really be able to talk to each other. And something that, you know, to keep in mind with the F-35 in general, is that you're really relying on these computers to be able to give you your situational awareness to help you to know when you have problems with the equipment and just really for everything for combat.
And so, now if I remember right, they started drawing this thing back in the 1980s when the USSR still existed, and they said, boy, the Soviet MiGs of the 21st century are going to be a real problem, so we're going to have to get to work on this thing. And so how could it be that is it just that the code is all written by different programmers working on different systems, but nobody thought that they all needed to be working on one flowchart here to make sure that their programs talk to each other, or what?
So some of the issues that occur is that as you keep on trying to correct problems in the code, that you don't have enough testing happening to see, okay, that change that we just made, does it actually impact all of the underlying code before that? And then, again, this is one of the problems of when you subcontract these systems the way that we tend to do, that you do have all of these companies that aren't really talking to each other and making sure that they're going to have interoperable systems.
All right. Well, and I guess there's nobody at the head of the canoe yelling row, huh? There's just, it's kind of a free-for-all there with the organization?
Presumably, the head of the Joint Program Office, Lieutenant General Chris Bogdan, is supposed to be the person who's saying row and making sure that all of these efforts are being coordinated. And so you're seeing that that oversight and management is not sufficient to correct these problems.
All right. Now, so I want to get back to all the money and all the bookkeeping tricks and all of that stuff in a minute. But can we go down a little bit of a list of some of the physical problems that the jet has at this point? And you can specify, you know, different versions of the plane have different problems if you need to as well.
Right. So some of the problems that we're seeing is still that this helmet that the pilot is supposed to be able to use is having stability problems with the computer, that there are concerns about wing drop so that the plane, you know, would keep on spinning. And additionally, there are concerns about the ability to be protected against lightning.
Wait. Go back to the wing drop for a second. What's that?
So wing drop is it's called uncommanded wing drop. So it's when maneuvering hard at high speeds that you just keep on spinning out of control. And this is a concern for all of the variants, but in particular, this is a problem for the Navy variants, and is even worse. Mm-hmm.
And then I think you say in here that, well, first of all, their solution is they're going to add on some spoilers, like, you know, a Honda.
Right.
That's going to fix it. But then, secondly, this is a problem not when you're flying over some Talibs, you know, dropping bombs at leisure. This is a problem when you're actually having to defend yourself in any way from another jet and doing hard turns in a dogfight. When you need that stability, when it really counts, is right where you don't have it. Is that right?
Absolutely. And it's most vulnerable when trying to maneuver out of the way of a missile.
Right. Lock on. Uh-oh. I guess you got me. Okay. And then, I'm sorry, where'd you, oh, lightning, after the wing drop, you mentioned flying in the rain, right?
Right. Something, again, that you don't really want to have to be worrying about, but there's a system, it's called OBIGS, that is supposed to make sure that you remove enough oxygen from the tank so that you don't have a risk of fire. But that system, even after several redesigns, isn't working. And so there are limitations so that the plane can't fly within 25 miles of thunderstorms. And that's particularly a problem because these planes are being trained, or they're training with these planes at Eglin Air Force Base, which is in southern Florida and has some of the most lightning strikes that we have in the country.
Mm-hmm. And then I think you say here you shoot this thing with a cap gun and it explodes. Is that right?
Yeah, it's always concerning when you look in a testing report and they warn you about cascading fire.
Well, and let's get back to the cap gun in a second, but you say here that it can't even dump fuel. If it needs to dump fuel in an emergency, it'll blow itself up doing that.
Yeah, there are, will be risks of fire and dumping fuel, which is something that, again, you just need to be able to do as a fighter plane.
This is like the movie Airplane 3, I guess.
Yeah.
It's Leslie Nielsen. They'll have to dig him up to do the on-screen version of this thing. Okay, but no, seriously, though, if you shoot it at all, you cannot expect it to survive a hit from cannon fire or shrapnel of any kind?
Yeah, that is currently a major risk for the program. And something that's really important to note with this was discovered through live fire testing. And this is something that Pentagon reformers really worked to be able to make sure that testing would include, mm-hmm. actually seeing how these weapon systems survive under live fire. Mm-hmm. And as there are discussions as to whether testing programs are slowing down the procurement process, it's important to remember that this kind of testing can discover significant safety vulnerabilities that we want to make sure that our pilots aren't going to have to be worrying about when they're in combat.
Mm-hmm. And then didn't I read something too about the rain that the so-called stealthy material that's not even stealthy anyway, you just got to change your frequency of your radar and there it is. But anyway, they said that the chemical composites and all the high-tech so-called skin on the plane also is just vulnerable to water. You can't get it, can't fly through a thick cloud even, I guess.
Right, and you have to be concerned as well with when there you have the long cure times for those stealth skins as well, which kind of result in it being a hangar queen even more.
Mm-hmm. a hanger queen. That means you can't use it. It just sits there. Right. It gets worked on.
Like a potted plant.
I got it. Yeah, that's, well, hey, safer in there for sure. And now, but see, that's where the fraud comes in, too, that you mentioned here, where they just start changing the definitions of words and things like this so that they can try to deny how much time these things spend under maintenance as it is. Is that correct?
Right. So some of the ways that they've been cooking those numbers is if a part fails, but they know that they're going to get a redesigned part for that later on, they don't count that as a part failure. And even though they know that they need new tires on the planes, when those tires are, you know, fall apart, they score that as a no defect tire replacement. It just kind of challenges any kind of logic.
Oh, and then actually,
about.
Speaking of which, you even say that they're having to change the tires, redesign the tires for the thing right now is one of
right.
the things on the block. They haven't figured out the tires for it yet in
correct.
2015. I'm sorry. Hang on right there, everybody. We'll be right back with Mandy Smithberger. She's from POGO, the Project on Government Oversight. You got to go read this thing. Not ready for prime time about the F-35. Lockheed's F-35. Oh, John Kerry's Mideast Peace Talks have gone nowhere. Hey, y'all, Scott Horton here for the Council for the National Interest at councilforthenationalinterest.org. U.S. military and financial support for Israel's permanent occupations of the West Bank and Gaza Strip is immoral, and it threatens national security by helping generate terrorist attacks against our country. And face it, it's bad for Israel, too. Without our unlimited support, they would have much more incentive to reach a lasting peace with their neighbors. It's past time for us to make our government stop making matters worse. Help support CNI at councilforthenationalinterest.org. Hey, y'all, Scott here. First, I want to take a second to thank all the show's listeners, sponsors, and supporters for helping make the show what it is. I literally couldn't do it without you. And now I want to tell you about the newest way to help support the show. Whenever you shop at Amazon.com, stop by ScottHorton.org first. And just click the Amazon logo on the right side of the page. That way the show will get a kickback from Amazon's end of the sale. It won't cost you an extra cent. And it's not just books. Amazon.com sells just about everything in the world, except cars, I think. So whatever you need, they've got it. Just click the Amazon logo on the right side of the page at ScottHorton.org or go to ScottHorton.org/Amazon. All right, you guys, welcome back. I'm Scott Horton. It's my show, Scott Horton Show. I'm talking with Mandy Smithberger from POGO.org. That's the Project on Government Oversight. The article, the study, is not ready for prime time. And there's a brand new thing from the Government Accountability Office, I think, as well. And a couple new reports out. The Fiscal Times, Yahoo News. Have some stories about this as well. It's been a big story for quite a while. What a piece of junk the F-35 is now, and how expensive it is. But now, before we get to that, back to that, Mandy, let me ask you this: are there any advantages to the F-35 over the F-15 that you could really give them credit for that make this necessary by any stretch of the imagination?
I think there are some capabilities that will be to our advantage when it comes to certain kinds of jamming capabilities. But what's really concerning is just how expensive this platform is to use and whether it's really practical and ready for combat.
Well, and jamming, I mean, you can put whatever new jammer you got in the nose of an F-15, right?
Right.
And we already got F-15s, right?
We do.
How many, by the way, do you have any idea?
You know, I don't know that off the top of my head, but it's important also to keep in mind that this system is part of why the Air Force is trying to retire the A-10 as well, which provides essential close air support.
Right. Tell them a little bit more about that, because that's a really important story there, I think. We've covered it before in the show, but this is a fight that's continuing right now in the Congress, et cetera.
Right. This is an ongoing fight. So for the second year in a row, the Air Force has proposed retiring the A-10. Saying that they need to be able to take the maintainers from the A-10 and, you know, bring them over to the F-35. But the problem is that the F-35 isn't going to be able to accomplish this mission until 2021 or 2022 at the soonest. And so instead you're going to have bombers and F-18s trying to cover this mission. But it's just not as effective of a platform, and there's a higher risk of fratricide and civilian casualties by using those platforms rather than the A-10 that we know works and is effective.
Yeah. In other words, the A-10 pilots can see what they're killing, and the F-35 or even F-18 pilots, et cetera, they have to rely on their computers to guess right, they hope, and cross their fingers and hope things go well when they drop their bombs from much higher up.
Absolutely.
Yeah, and from much higher, at much higher speed. And, of course, you know, it seems like the theory probably, you know, in the Lockheed promotional videos is like one day we're going to have to meet China out in the Pacific Ocean or something like this. But in truth, and I'm not advocating this, but I'm just saying for argument's sake, in truth, our wars are against tribal natives in lands that we're conquering. And they can't possibly shoot back, you know, against any of these planes. And so you could really, you know, you could fight the Afghan war with Cessnas or whatever, right? Certainly you don't need these highest big ticket so-called super jets that don't even perform what they're supposed to do. But even if you took their performance for granted, they're so overqualified for the job that they're ineffective at it.
Right. And again, look at how often we're using the A-10 in our current wars and how the F-22 didn't make an appearance until our airstrikes in Syria.
And now, and by the way, how's the F-22 doing these days?
So the F-22 suffered a similar problem to what we're seeing with the F-35, where a lot of capabilities were deferred until later blocks so as to not be considered cost for the acquisition program. And we have a $7 billion upgrade package that we have. It's called a quote-unquote modernization package, specifically $11.3 billion added on to make sure that the F-22 is capable of everything we need it to be.
And is it still the case that they're not making any new ones?
Correct. They are not making any new ones.
Well, that's good at least. And now I saw in your bio here at Pogo 2 that you did some work on the Littoral Combat Ship. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Oh, sure. So the Littoral Combat Ship is a Navy program that's supposed to be kind of a plug and play. And again, kind of similar to the Joint Strike Fighter, it's supposed to be able to do a lot of missions. And what we've really found with the LCS is that because they have had so much overlap between production and testing, that the LCS isn't able to yet perform the missions that we need it to, that it's expensive, that there have been manufacturing problems that have happened with the program. And so Secretary Hagel ordered a review of the program after the Director of Operational Test and Evaluation pointed out, hey, this the LCS is not going to be combat survivable.
Meaning, again, you shoot it at all and it's done?
Correct.
Uh-huh. And, yeah, it's almost like it's not really the Navy or the Air Force, you know, commanders actually interested having any say in the design of these things at all. It's simply just, well, what costs the most and what will need the most improvements over time? let's make it as shoddy as we can so we always have to fix it. I even read, I'm not saying I endorse this, but just for irony's sake, I read a comment that seemed very informed in on an article about the F-35 once saying, all of this negative stuff about the F-35 is a Lockheed propaganda campaign against their own fighter because they want to start all over again because that's where the money's really at. And so you can't even trust the critics because it's all a plot to get us for even more. And it just goes to show whether that's true or not, obviously, but it just goes to show that it's kind of pretty widely accepted that the real purpose of the F-35 is to make money off of the taxpayer, not to produce a plane that does all the things they say it's going to do.
Right, and it's important to keep in mind that as we talk about, you know, reforms to the pay and benefits for our troops, that you see that the profit margins for these major defense companies have not suffered at all as a result of sequestration.
Right. All right, now, back to the F-35's problems here a bit. What about the vertical takeoff? Is that working well? At least that technology has been mastered for decades by others, if not, you know, the Americans.
Right, so that making sure that that works is still an ongoing concern, and yeah.
So in other words, they don't necessarily have that solved,
right?
Even that decades-old technology there. Is there any part of the F-35 that they are sure were? I was going to say the cockpit, but no, I remember the time the pilot got locked in the cockpit, and it took a few hours to get him out of there with crowbars. So
I thought that was with the F-22.
Oh, that could have been the 22, maybe, yeah. Oh, I don't know. Yeah, well, I defer to you on that. Is it so the cockpit works then? The hinge on the latch on the thing has not been a problem so far on the F-35?
Yeah, as far as we know, that's not a problem, but we do know that the nut plates that are used on the outside of the F-35 continue to be something that they undercount how often they're having to replace those.
Yeah. And now, I'm sorry, because I just kind of made a wild assertion about the stealthiness, but is that your understanding, too, that these things aren't really stealthy if you just point an old-fashioned long-wave radar at them?
That is my understanding as well. And with the wing drop concerns that we were talking about before and putting those external spoilers on, that's going to be something else that compromises the signature of the plane.
Right. Which is also why I can barely hold any bombs, because for the supposed stealthiness that it doesn't have in the first place. Anyway, great work, Mandy. Thank you so much for your time on the show.
Thank you so much.
All right, y'all, that's Mandy Smithberger. She's at pogo.org. The article is not ready for prime time. Hey, I'll Scott Horton here. It's always safe to say that one should keep at least some of your savings in precious metals as a hedge against inflation. And if this economy ever does heat back up and the banks start expanding credit, rising prices could make metals a very profitable bet. Since 1977, Robertson Roberts Brokerage, Inc. has been helping people buy and sell gold, silver, platinum, and palladium, and they do it well. They're fast, reliable, and trusted for more than 35 years. And they take Bitcoin. Call Robertson Roberts at 1-800-874-9760 or stop by rrbi.co. Hey, I'm Scott Horton here to tell you about this great new book by Michael Swanson, The War State. In The War State, Swanson examines how Presidents Truman, Eisenhower, and Kennedy both expanded and fought to limit the rise of the new national security state after World War II. If this nation is ever to live up to its creed of liberty and prosperity for everyone, we are going to have to abolish the empire. Know your enemy. Get The War State by Michael Swanson. It's available at your local bookstore or at Amazon.com in Kindle or in paperback. Just click the book in the right margin at scotthorton.org or thewarstate.com. All right, you guys, welcome back to the show. It's me, Scott. I'm here live on the Liberty Radio Network from noon to 2 Eastern Time, if you don't know it. And when I'm not interviewing people, I'm yelling about stuff. Might want to listen. You people who are hearing this later, recorded. And you can sign up for either or podcast feed, too, just the interviews or the whole show. Okay, Ray McGovern is on the line. For 27 years, he was a CIA officer, but he's a peacenik now. And he's got the spotlight today on antiwar.com, Guiding Obama into Global Make-Believe. And I know the title sounds kind of wishy-washy, but he doesn't let the president off the hook here. But it's just about all of Obama's horrible advisors and all the horrible things that they do and the lies that they say. Welcome back to the show, Ray. How are you?
Thanks, Scott. I'm doing well.
Very happy to have you back on the show. I really appreciate you joining us and covering this issue. We spoke last week, but we only had just a few minutes at the end to talk about Russia and Ukraine. And then now you have this great new article out and everything. So I want to talk with you more about this. First of all, I kind of take it personal that the president of Russia said, I don't know if he said it or exactly how it was. I only saw the headline. But something like, oh, Putin implies, maybe said it himself, that he was ready to put Russia on a nuclear alert over the issue of Crimea. That kind of thing. And this right is everything which is, you know, more or less blowing over. He wants to go talking tough like that. And I wonder what's your reaction to that?
Well, I learned that from the Washington Post today. And that's not a very reliable source. But what they're what they're talking about is a film, a sort of documentary, 2 hours long, that was filmed months ago. And in the lead-in, or whatever they call that, the trailer, I guess they call it, it's revealed that, and it ran last night, by the way, on Russian TV, Putin says that, he planned this thing on the night of February 23rd, 2014, so last year. And Michael Birnbaum, who's the Washington Post reporter on all this, neglects to mention what happened the day before. it's surreal. The reader would never realize that on the day before, there was a putsch. there was a coup d'etat led by pro-fascists, by proto-fascists and Nazi stormtroopers that dislodged the duly elected president of Ukraine. He had to flee for his life. But the idea you get from Birnbaum is, he kind of just left because he was afraid. Now, the business about the nuclear thing, all Putin says, as far as I can tell from the reporting, I haven't seen the actual documentary yet, all he says is that the situation was so serious that, he was prepared to put his forces on nuclear alert, but he'd try everything else short of that. And what he explains, and what the Russians are very proud of, we're very proud of our special forces, the people who go in and get Osama bin Laden and shoot him in the head. You know, it might have been good to capture him, and ask him something about Al-Qaeda. He might have known something about that. Anyhow, that's a digression. We're very, special forces and all that kind of stuff. Well, so are the Russians. And what Putin reveals in his film is that as soon as he saw the handwriting on the wall, that NATO was coming in big time into Kiev, starting with this coup d'etat, which Victoria Nuland, our Assistant Secretary of State, advertised. Now, she didn't advertise it deliberately, but as most of your listeners, I hope, know, that just 2.5 weeks before the putsch, before the coup, she was caught on the telephone with the U.S. ambassador to Kiev saying, Yats is our guy, Klitschko and the rest can wait in the wings. Yats knows about the central bank, he knows about austerity, he's our guy. Now, little did she know that would be intercepted and put on YouTube. Again, YouTube, 2.5 weeks before the 22nd of February when the putsch took place. So what we have here is a clear advertisement. I have never, I've been watching things 53 years now with the CIA, and I've never seen a coup advertised 2.5 weeks before to include the new prime minister that the coup leaders are going to install and have it happen. It used to be, pardon my going back to old times, but it used to be a decent respect for the opinions of mankind would prevent a fellow named in an intercepted conversation by the coup plotters from becoming actually the prime minister. But no. Nuland has no shame. She has no fear. And so Yatsenyuk, who continues and is even today the prime minister of Ukraine, he got into office. So it's a very interesting story. What Putin advertises is the use of his special forces. They're called Spetsnaz. Okay. What they did was reinforce, already permitted up to 20,000 forces in Crimea, sort of on the QT, stealthily, gradually, they had been doing that. And so he claims, and I don't know if this is true or not, that they did not exceed the 20,000 troop level that is permitted by treaty with Ukraine. But these were the so-called вежливые люди, okay? The translation is polite people, okay? And they were, variously called the green people, the no insignias on their uniforms. Well, what they did was very cleverly get all ready, and at a given signal, they took over Crimea without a shot being fired. Now, a lot of people in this country have never learned that. A professor. I was at a peacenik meeting not too long ago where a professor from Catholic University said, we have to stand up to Putin. My 6-year-old son, 6 years, came home from Sunday school, and he had composed a big placard, a big poster, and it said, Putin, don't you know the commandment, thou shalt not kill? So I raised my hand gently, and I said, well, what are you referring to? Sure, Crimea, right? The aggression on the Crimea, the invasion of Crimea. I said, well, how many people got killed? Oh, I don't know, hundreds, thousands? I said, would you believe zero? Well, because it's true. So I just raised that, Scott, to show the abysmal ignorance of the United States people on this. And it's, sort of only partly their fault because they don't want to know about this, but certainly they can't get that from Fox News or the other quasi news organizations that they tune into. It's a very, very serious problem.
Yeah. Well, no question. The Americans have picked this fight here, and now the article is about the latest. So to fast forward a bit, we've got a peace deal here. It's Minsk 2. Minsk 1 didn't quite hold, but Minsk 2 has Germany and France behind it. It seems to be holding, more or less. And I think, that means they're shooting on both sides from time to time. But overall, the commanders have ordered everybody to stop killing each other anyway, kind of thing. So it's good enough for now. But then, as you're reporting here, the high commander of NATO at U.S. Air Force General Philip Breedlove keeps leaking these stories he has for, this whole last year that, the Russians are invading eastern Ukraine. They're invading eastern Ukraine, and they're behind the entire secession in the east and all of this, or attempted secession in the east. Now the music's playing. We got to go to this break. But when we get back, we're going to talk about the Germans really pushing back hard against the Americans and their provocations at this very delicate time. So hold it right there, y'all. We'll be right back with Ray McGovern in just a sec. In the meantime, check him out at antiwar.com/McGovern. You hate government? One of them libertarian types? Or maybe you just can't stand the president, gun grabbers, or warmongers. Me too. That's why I invented LibertyStickers.com. Well, Rick owns it now, and I didn't make up all of them, but still, if you're driving around and want to tell everyone else how wrong their politics are, there's only one place to go. LibertyStickers.com has got your bumper covered. Left, right, libertarian, empire, police state, founders quote, central banking. Yes, bumper stickers about central banking. Lots of them. And, well, everything that matters. LibertyStickers.com. Everyone else's stickers suck. All right, y'all, welcome back. I'm Scott. I'm talking with Ray McGovern here. Former Soviet specialist at the CIA way back when. Now he's a peacenik with the Veteran Intelligence Professionals for Sanity. He gives speeches along those lines, too. Peace, that is. And he writes for ConsortiumNews.com, and we got his full archive at antiwar.com as well. original.antiwar.com/McGovern. And he's the spotlight today, guiding Obama into global make-believe. And so that's what we're talking about, all the false narratives and the truth about American intervention in Ukraine and the aftermath. And you know what? To go back to the coup thing there real quick, it seems notable. We may have discussed this before, Ray, but there's this great clip of Gideon Rose, the editor of Foreign Affairs, the Journal of the Council on Foreign Relations. So he's in the know. And it was, I guess, the day that Putin was deciding to take Crimea. It was that night, or 23rd May was the 24th of February, 2014. He was on the Colbert Report and talking about how, ha, 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 we're sneaking off with Crimea. And he explained, with Ukraine, Robin to Russia's Batman. And so we're the new boyfriend and we're winning her. And so the trick is we got to win Ukraine away from Russia without provoking too much of a backlash and, try and get away with it. But it was supposed to be easy, and we could sit here and go on a comedy show and mock Putin for being a fool and being distracted by the Olympics while we're running off with the country next door and all of this. But so I wonder whether you think that was really right, that what they were going for in the first place then was it was supposed to be easy. More or less like 2004 with the Orange Revolution. They didn't lose Crimea that time. They didn't have a civil war with the East that time. And, are they basically just floundering around now trying to figure out what to do? I mean, it seems like they're deliberately trying to make it worse, but I don't know why. If that wasn't their purpose in the first place, just to create a crisis.
Well, Scott, if they thought it was going to be easy, they're even dumber than I ever thought. Anyone who knows one iota about Russian history or Russian strategic objectives and concerns would have known that as soon as they did a coup in Kiev and put on our own people and then said Russian would not be one of the official languages anymore and went through that whole charade, if you were Putin, And you were already worried about anti-ballistic missile systems going into the Black Sea and all around your periphery. And you saw this happen right on your border. And you knew that you only had one warm water port for your whole Navy, and that was Sevastopol in Crimea. You would make the necessary preparations just exactly the way Putin describes it after the 22nd of February. Now, I come back to that because I've done an informal poll, and I've included university professors, and 93% of Americans do not know what happened on February 22nd when we sponsored, advertised 2.5 weeks before on YouTube, we sponsored a coup in Kyiv. That is key, okay? Now, why is that key? Well, it can't be dismissed. We have the voice of Nuland and our ambassador there in Kyiv. I was having a little debate on Amy Goodman about 2 months after this with a Yaley, a professor at Yale, and he was saying, "Oh, you know, if McGovern, if that's all you have, if you basing your whole thing on that conversation, well, come on." And I said, "Well, that's not all I have. But have you ever seen?" A revolution or a coup d'etat, really, advertised on YouTube 2.5 weeks before. Well, I got nowhere. So, and Andrew Bacevich has an incredibly good article about Yaleys and how what they did to us with respect to Vietnam. There's a unreality that attends to academics who come into Washington and think that since they're the cat's pajamas in Yale or Harvard, that they can run the world. And that's what's happened here.
Yeah, he calls him a blight, like Asian carp.
You got it, yeah. So, you know, with all this brouhaha, I come back to the documentary. I hope that we'll all be able to see that thing with Putin sort of bragging about how he did all this with zero casualties in Crimea. When I was in Russia most recently in September, okay, when I had an hour before I got on a plane, I went to the souvenir shop and there are cups all over the place, Putin doing the breaststroke, you know, and there's one that says that shows the Spetsnaz, the special forces of the Russian army in their kind of, you know, with their blindfolds and so forth, not blindfolds, but their black attire. And it says underneath it, polite people. And then on the other side, it shows Putin and it says, Samui Vyezhlivui is Ludier, the most polite of all people. Now, the Russians knew what was going on, but they knew that he did this in a very clever way. Not the ham-handed way that our covert action operators or the people we sponsor to do our dirty work do it. Not one casualty. Now that story's going to come out. Will they ignore that? Of course they'll ignore that in our media. What I think is necessary is for serious Russian scholars, serious people from academe, and perhaps if you can find one from the media, like Steve Cohen or like John Mearsheimer, who wrote for Foreign Affairs and said, Ukraine is our fault. Okay. They need to get some sort of hearing in the mainstream media as an alternative voice before Obama, before he kind of chickens out and disregards what Germany is saying and goes with the neocons and gives Ukraine offensive military weapons.
All right, now back to that, what the Germans are saying and what the Americans are doing there. Now, I know NATO is its own bureaucracy, but this guy's in the American chain of command. He's just an American general, nothing more than that, ultimately.
Strange Love?
Breedlove.
Oh, Breedlove, right.
Which I kept getting confused and thinking he must be a Brit with a name like that, but there you go. I know why, because that's the name of the head of the MI6 from the Downing Street memo. That's why I was getting that confused. I didn't know why. All right, now, so anyway, different guy. Maybe relation, I don't know. Anyway. The head of NATO keeps lying about what Russia is doing in eastern Ukraine. And as you point out, a few different sources, but especially Der Spiegel in Germany, has shot this down with quotes from German intelligence saying, oh, well, you know, basically he's just lying. No, there is not a Russian invasion. No, the infantry has not crossed the border. No to all these tanks, whatever it is. And so, but to the point, what's it all about? Are the Americans, this is what I was trying to ask you last week too, are the Americans really doing their best to undermine, is this guy, that's his orders, Breedlove's orders are to undermine the French and German brokered peace deal here?
Yeah, it's Breedlove, it's McCain, it's Nuland, it's all the neocons. They're trying to tell Obama, look, don't pay any attention to the Germans. Germany is just one of those other countries in old Europe, for God's sake. You don't have to mind them. And so they're inflating all these statistics to the point where the German chancellery goes to Der Spiegel and says, you know, they live in a wonder world here. And every time I hear Breedlove talk, I shake my head. Now, that's not innocuous, Scott. Think of, you're a Russian, right? You're looking on at this and you see Breedlove and you see all these other people making these fantastic charges. Well, number one, the charitable explanation is Obama just doesn't control anything having to do with foreign policy. And number two, the worst interpretation is he doesn't care and he's quite likely to bend on this. What I see and what I'm really afraid of is a kind of noxious trade-off here. Obama seems legitimately to want a deal with Iran on the nuclear issue. He needs Russian help for that. But he is not so intent on resisting the neocons on Ukraine. So I'm afraid that giving the neocons a sop, some sop, on Ukraine by sending some offensive missiles to Ukraine, maybe he thinks he could calm them down a little bit so that they won't make so much noise if he does do a treaty or an arrangement with Iran. Now, I don't have any evidence of that, but I've watched this mealy-mouthed, malleable president of ours lose his backbone. And he's the kind of lawyer that would say, well, we compromise here. So if he goes through with the Iran thing, which I'd like to see, he may think, well, I can give these people a sop by sending some Ukrainian some arms. And if he doesn't know what strong reaction he's going to meet from that, from the Russian side, well, he's very, very poorly advised.
Yeah. Hey, do they still have a red phone on his desk there?
I sure hope so.
Both sides still have thousands of H-bombs, so me too. All right, thanks, Ray. Appreciate it.
Most welcome, Scott.
Ray McGovern again, everybody. Spotlight today on antiwar.com. Also, consortiumnews.com. See you tomorrow. Thanks for listening.